from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier and I'm proudly broadcasting from Lackawanna College's School of Petroleum and Natural Gas and their brand new center in Tunkhannock. And thanks to the magic of Skype and the internet, I'm able to connect with DC Taylor in studio. How are you, DC?
Good morning. Yeah, Bill, doing well. And yes, and so you're up there at the nice pretty brand new facility up there in Tunkhannock. Correct.
Yeah, and we saw the center open in actually over the summer, 2021.
Right. Yeah.
And the center is I like to call it the Taj Mahal of oil and gas programs. For two-year associate degrees. I always like to say that the school is more, you won't come here to be an engineer, but you'll come here to learn how to speak like an engineer, talk like an engineer, and then go do the work on behalf of an engineer. And I think that's the beauty of the program. We're going to try and catch up with somebody from the college here later in the program, maybe sit down with a student or a faculty member. But before I dive into that, DC, it's Farm Show Week. We talked a little bit about it last week on the program, but here we have closed out the 2022 Farm Show, and I spent a lot of time down there this past week, and I figured I'd like to share some of my experiences with the audience and you.
Please.
And chat about what I think is one of the best kept secrets in Pennsylvania, of course, is the Farm Show. You know, to cut right to it, COVID has been a problem for a lot of different things, and I'm glad to see that the state still committed to doing the Farm Show this year. It was held in Harrisburg all this week. And despite COVID, the only restrictions were, they restricted like the size of the booths and the audience space, so there was less vendors. The food court was set up a little different. They encouraged masks and washing your hands, and they had plenty of hand sanitizer everywhere. But outside of that, there wasn't any real restrictions. And I think the administration personally weighed the impact that mandating masks or vaccine cards would have had on the Farm Show, which I think was already going to struggle just because of everything going on. And I think they really just tried to put it in the people being more responsible. And again, in my experience, it seemed like people were spaced out. I think they came in at like 20 to 30% of a normal crowd, which actually is better than I thought it was going to be. But it was still a little depressing when you're used to just seeing the massive crowds and all the vendors and folks that were there. With that being said, the folks that were there were enjoying themselves. I did have the opportunity, as I do every year, to participate in the Junior Livestock Auction. And that is an exciting time for young adults who are working hard and diligent to raise animals, whether it be goats or lambs, pigs, cows. This year they even did rabbits. And then you bring them down to the Farm Show. They have to meet a certain standard. If they meet that standard, you get to show them, and people get to bid on them. The auction was lively. I'm glad to report on that. A lot of bidders, a lot of companies were still there. There was an online component, so those who didn't feel comfortable coming to the actual auction could participate online. I'm proud to report that all of the livestock that was shown from Susquehanna and Wyoming County that I'm aware of, and I was there for about 6 hours, was purchased. Coterra Energy purchased quite a few lambs, a goat. We did bid on a pig, but I got to give a shout out to New Milford Hardware for outbidding me on that pig over the internet. So I'm glad technology is a blessing for those who couldn't travel in for the event. But all told, I believe I purchased 7 animals on behalf of Coterra. We had a guest with us this year, and that was Cassandra Coleman from the America 250 PA campaign. Her first time going to a livestock auction, and we helped her in the campaign participate in the auction, so that was exciting. I want to give a shout out to Rob Bulware, a friend of the program who's been on this show many times, Seneca Resources, National Fuel, and a variety of other companies that he bids on behalf of. But it was exciting to just spend the day with Rob Bulware, as we often do this time of year, learn from him and see. But I think he purchased in excess of 20 different animals throughout the day. And I think it just speaks volumes to the energy industry's commitment to agriculture. I want to give a shout out to our friend Dave Williams. He's like the biggest celebrity down there, DC, at the farm show. It truly is amazing.
I've heard, yeah.
He sets up next to Punxsutawney Phil and the groundhog, the most famous groundhog in the world. And he has a booth there. And basically every politician, every dairy queen, dairy princess, dairy ambassador comes by. You can imagine, and they get interviews. Dave interviewed me, I think, four or five separate times during my visits down there. He walks around, he gets special treatment. They, you know, they remove the barriers, or they open up a side door, and he can pop out in the arena anywhere he wants with his camera. But just like to give credit to somebody who's dedicated his life to agriculture, promoting agriculture, and we really appreciate that as well. And then I want to give a shout out to just some of the politicians who made their way over from Harrisburg, from the Capitol. The House was in session this week, I believe. The Senate wasn't. But just to take their time and go over and meet with the constituents and take in the vendors and the different events and things that were going on. So all in all, it was great to be there, especially after missing it last year. And I hope folks who have been to the farm show appreciate this recap. And I hope folks who have not been to the farm show maybe mark their calendars next year and try to make it down, especially if COVID isn't as big of an issue as it is now. Maybe by then we'll be ahead of this thing and you can really celebrate the agricultural industry. I know a lot of people do ask about the butter sculpture and what I thought of it. I must say it was simple and I liked it. That aspect of it. It was essentially, if you didn't see a picture of it, DC or those listening at home, essentially it was a man and a woman farmer standing in front of their farm, and again, all sculpted out of butter. And it just, I believe the whole message this year was progress and how the farmer keeps moving forward, and now it's a staple of Pennsylvania. It's my understanding, though I can't confirm, that the 2,000 pounds of butter or whatever is used to sculpt this is actually sent back to a farm and is recycled some way. I don't know how, but yeah, they said that there's no waste of the product at the end of the day. So
that's good.
Who knows? I forget, DC, have you ever been to the farm show?
I have not. Yeah, I've heard all about it, especially from you guys. You know, your trips down there, and it's really making me actually want to go now.
Well, you're laughing there. One of the things the farm show does really well is treat the media very well, giving them all sorts of access and areas to you know, sit down, record, report, whatever it might be. So I'm thinking maybe we might have to pull some strings and get the Shale Gas News a credential and go down and maybe do a broadcast from the farm show next year.
Very nice. That'd be good. All right.
Yeah. Well, this is the Shale Gas News, and I know our legions of fans would be worried if we didn't cover any of the exciting news in the energy industry. So let's dive into some stuff. Oil production keeps surging under Biden administration, despite his attempts to shut it down. The U.S. crude oil production is projected to set a full year record in 2023. The Federal Energy Information Administration said in a report. Why this matters? The forecast in EIA's wider monthly outlook yesterday signals the recovery from the pandemic-fueled production collapse of 2020, and it also shows how the oil and gas continue to develop and remain robust, even as the White House is aiming to reorient the economy around a zero-carbon energy. And by the numbers, EIA sees the annual U.S. production averaging 12.4 million barrels per day. In 2023, that's slightly ahead of the 2019's 12.3 million barrels per day average, though they don't see the peak of nearly 13 million barrels per day that was reached right before COVID in 2019. But I have a feeling that in the next couple of years, we will probably meet or surpass that, though we'll have to see how the Biden administration deals with that reality or prospect of reality. U.S. oil and gas producers ramp up fracking in a sign of stronger output gains. As oil prices have surged past $80 a barrel and U.S. oil and gas producers are making money again, something they haven't done for a few years, producers are paving the way for faster production by expanding new well completions in the Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico. the country's top oil field, or shale oil field, if you want to be more specific. The number of pressure pumping units at work in the Permian rose about 5% in December over the previous month. And pressure pumping is one of the last steps required to complete a well. And it's probably the, if you track those crews, it's probably the best indicator we have now of future oil or gas production coming online. It used to be tracked by the drilling rig, but rigs have become so efficient that the rig count data is a little, it's not as impressive as it once was, but it doesn't really take into account the efficiency gains, the technological advances, the innovations. So I really think pressure pumping crews is probably a better signal of future output gains. U.S. crude oil output to rise to record in 2023. This is what they're projecting, that the production is on pace to maybe even surpass the annual high of 12, or I'm sorry, the previous record of 13 million barrels per day. That's pretty exciting stuff. Global oil and natural gas investments are rising this year, or expected to rise at about 4%. This is according to Natural Gas Intelligence. But global oil and gas investments are expected to grow by $26 billion this year as the industry continues to recover from the worst of the coronavirus. Overall, oil and gas investment is forecasted to climb to $628 billion this year, and that's up from $602 billion in 2021. The pervasive spread of Omicron variant will inevitably lead to some restrictions on the movement of capital in the first quarter, capping some of the energy demand and recovery in major crude-consuming sectors of road transport and aviation, but all indications are that that capital will continue to flow and that the energy industry will expand in 2022. I'm still getting used to 2022 here, DC. I want to say 2021.
I've dated quite a few files in my my system here as I'm recording things, still dating them 2021. I'm like, oh, God. I got to go back and correct them, and I have to correct them in the session. It's a producer's nightmare, really.
Oh, geez. And then you'll figure it out soon enough.
One of these days.
At least in February, right? The oil man's fury, shale pioneer Harold Hamm blasts the Biden fossil fuel policies. The Financial Times reported that Harold Hamm, the billionaire oil tycoon, confidently stands in a crisp suit at the head of a long table of a boardroom high up in his Oklahoma City skyscraper. And he's with sudden alarm. He's having to deal with America's future, especially under Biden's administration, right? The article is interesting. I read it in depth, and I even watched a video on it. Harold Hamm, he's probably most famous for finding or proving the Bakken, or the North Dakota Basin, as we know. But he's been involved with a variety of different other oil companies across the country, across the world, in fact. And I think I was even reading an interesting fact that he's pretty much self-taught. He might have a degree in geology, but for some reason I remember reading somewhere that he might even taught himself geology and just learned everything he could from the energy industry. And at the end of that, built up one of the most famous oil and gas companies. But he talks about how he's in all of the above believer, and he's not a Republican or a Democrat. He's a fossil fuelocrat, if that makes sense. And he believes that the energy industry needs to stop being vilified, especially by our president, current president, and it needs to be allowed to expand. And, you know, he makes the argument that if you really want to achieve your goals of carbon neutrality, or reducing carbon and impacting the climate, it needs to be done with fossil fuels. It can't be done with the belief that these solar and green energy technologies somehow overnight are going to be able to carry us, or even this belief that electric vehicles are somehow or another the answer to all of our problems. Biden administration plans restrictions on oil and gas leasing in Alaska. I mean, we almost sound like a broken record here. Every few months they're trying to figure out a new way to handicap or even kneecap the energy industry. Alaska is a large oil-producing state. It's rich in federal lands that have a lot of resources, not only oil and natural gas, but also rare earth minerals and things like that. But the Interior Department Bureau of Land Management intends to block leasing on a large share of oil and gas-rich federal lands in Alaska, a move that accords with the Biden administration's strategy of scaling back fossil fuel production in an attempt to mitigate climate change. In a Monday court filing, the BLM said it would return management of the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska to a plan established during the Barack Obama's tenure, leaving some 52% or 11 million acres of the reserve open to oil and natural gas, but shutting down that other 48%. Keep in mind, folks, I like to remind everyone that while oil and gas companies may not develop that land today, it takes years. It takes effort, innovation, studying, research, capital, man hours, to develop land like that, especially remote land, like that stuff needs to work now. And while it may not seem like a big deal that it gets shut down now because it's not actively being developed or being developed in a way that everybody recognizes, the reality is a lot of work has to go into it in order to be able to develop that acreage. And just shutting this stuff off now really puts us in a disadvantage or handicaps us when we really need that energy. International story here that caught my attention. Canadian natural forecasting higher spending, more natural gas production. So our brethren in the north, also a big fossil fuel producer, is seeing improved prices along with an increased ownership of drilling targets in northern and Alberta and British Columbia. That should help natural gas production climb by about 18% year over year, Canadian Natural Resources said recently. And the Calgary Exploration and Production Company announced in its budget of a natural gas target of basically 0.98 to 2 billion cubic feet per day. Planned capital is set to increase to be about $4.4 billion up there. But I think what's interesting is the shale revolution in the United States has in some way curtailed Canadian production. The Obama administration and the Biden administration's efforts to block new pipelines from Canada in the United States has further curtailed the Canadian country's ability to produce energy, either selling it to us in the United States or getting it to existing export terminals in the United States to get to market. But I think it's refreshing to see Canada, which has struggled up there, being in a position to invest. The other thing I always get a kick out of is Canada, especially their prime minister, I believe it's Trudeau, I think I'm saying that right.
Yes.
Might be wrong. But he is considered to be very liberal, very progressive. But he, at least from what I've seen, still supports the fossil fuel industry. I think he recognizes the tremendous impact it has on the Canadian economy, and they can't risk it going away. They can't shut it down. So in some regards, I always got a kick out of their policies towards oil and natural gas development being different than Obama and Biden's policies towards that. Global oil and gas investments to reach $628 billion. We already covered that. That's just another story that I saw here. Gas flows reversed eastward via the Russia-Yamal pipeline for the 22nd day. For those who've been following it, Russia continues to kind of curtail or limit how much gas is flowing into Western Europe. They rely on that gas. Russia uses it as a geopolitical weapon from time to time. And I think basically Europe's been dealing with a very deep cold spell. Energy prices are through the roof. The green energy that they expected to have from solar and wind is not producing. No big surprise there. It's been kind of the rhetoric for the last couple of years. And the reality is that they have to rely on Russia, of all places, to supply them the energy they need. And I guess Russia is sending some gas flows eastward or westward or however it is. But we'll have to dig into that story a little bit more here. I believe it is time for Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us today?
Bill and DC, and this coming week marks a very big historic moment in music history, Saturday Night Fever, the soundtrack, one of the longest running and highest charting soundtracks, as you well know, of all time. I had the fold out, the gatefold, double album, the whole deal. A big deal. The movie was a big deal. The movie was, you know, filmed with less than we have in both our pockets here. Right. And it turned out to be a part of pop culture, you know, pop culture back in 1978. Saturday Night Fever this week. It was based on an article, you know, called Tribal Rights of the New Saturday Night. And it was a detailed look at the new generation, the new soon-to-be 80s generation of urban teenagers, of course, set in Brooklyn. Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. The Bee Gees had nothing to do with it. Most of the film was already shot when music producer turned movie producer turned movie producer, Robert Stigwood, of course, commissioned the Bee Gees to write songs for it. They had all other songs in mind until 4 months before the actual editing. So the Bee Gees stepped in at the last minute. The movie extended disco's lifespan by 3 years. So, 78 to 81.
Okay.
It had a lot of Rocky connections. It was supposed to be directed by John Avildsen, whose previous film was Rocky I and Rocky II. Unfortunately, it didn't work out with his schedule, and John Badham, a few weeks before, took over. Travolta was already so famous that making the movie was a hassle. Of course, he was in Welcome Back, Carter.
Right. Yep. Yeah, sure.
Which led to the movie. So they had to do a lot of the shots on Brooklyn streets at night or at 2:30 in the morning, and it still gathered crowds in the area, of course, to see, you know, to see Travolta at Lenny's Pizza. I had Lenny's Pizza, by the way, a couple of years back on Earth Day. It was right under the L train and the whole deal.
Okay.
It was pretty cool being there. The whole place was like walking into Travolta's living room. You know, everything was signed, all the memorabilia, the one-sheet posters, the lobby cards on there. Interesting, of course, the soundtrack broke all kind of records. 15 million copies in the U.S. alone. Another 8 million in the U.K. It was supplanted by The Bodyguard some 15 years later. The Bodyguard with Whitney Houston tied Saturday Night Fever's chart-topping stay for 24 weeks. So that was a pretty big deal. And Dee, can you name any of the other, now that was 24 weeks, can you name any of the other top 10 big charting albums from either the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s that had an incredible run of over 24 weeks on the Billboard album charts?
You know, Rusty, every Sunday I listen to old Casey Kasem's
weekly. That's correct.
You think I would absorb something.
I thought this would be the biggest deal with you being in the music business as long as I've been in it. Lord,
there are so many things bouncing around. There's Fleetwood Mac Rumors.
Yeah, that's correct. That is one of them. Another one.
Wow.
The obvious one is Pink Floyd's.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
890 weeks. That's pretty unbelievable. I know if I buy into that. But
right, sure.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson Thriller.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Give me one more.
Madonna.
No.
No?
No.
Elton John.
No.
Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones, not top 10. Brothers in Arms. Dire Straits.
Okay.
Thriller, of course, you mentioned. I would not have guessed this. Theme from The Exorcist. Mike Oldfield. Tubular Bells.
No kidding.
How about that?
I would not have, yes.
74 weeks. 74 weeks. I guess it had a lot of... you know, that music was orchestral, and it just wasn't for the one theme from The Exodus that he came out with back in, you know, 73, but it was a lot of other things. The number one was amazing, was 135 weeks on the Billboard chart. Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Wow.
I would not have known that. I did not think that was, and you got all the other ones. Yeah. Bridge Over Troubled Water, 135 weeks. So it was a paltry 24 weeks, and 24 weeks for Saturday Night Fever, but nonetheless, one of the biggest selling albums in history this week, back in 1978, D.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Rusty. This is the Shale Gas News. Bill, what do you have for us now?
I want to share now a... audio file from Mike Summers, president and CEO of API. Mike's been on the program, and you might recall last summer visited us up in Northeast Pennsylvania and even here at Lackawanna College, where we're broadcasting from today. Earlier this week, Mike and others from API hosted what they call the State of American Energy. It's essentially the energy industry's version of the State of the Union. And in it, Mike shared his vision for the American energy industry. And he also talked about where we are. And I think one of the messages he offered is hope, not only hope for ending COVID and hope for a brighter tomorrow, but also the opportunity to tackle some of the more challenging issues of our generation, from climate change and things like that. So we share now Mike's address from API's State of American Energy 2022. Enjoy.
Today, I have the honor of speaking about the state of American energy as API and our nearly 600 member companies embark on the new year. And for all the challenges we can expect, I couldn't be more confident in our industry, the progress we enable, and America's position in leading the world on energy and climate in 2022. People count on us for reliable energy, good jobs, and millions of products made with natural gas and oil every day. We are proud of that and our industry's leading role in delivering solutions that are building a lower carbon future. In fact, American energy is produced to environmental and safety standards that are among the highest in the world. This enables America to lead the world in accelerating safety and sustainability. The work we do is crucial, essential, and consequential. Our country continues to grapple with uncertainty, a pandemic, a short-term crisis in the supply chain, and a quest to spur growth without accelerating inflation. But here's one thing we know for sure. The path to American prosperity, security, and progress must include American natural gas and oil. We are an industry of engineers, entrepreneurs, skilled craft workers, and problem solvers, with decades of ingenuity and investment that strengthen America. API members have taken the U.S. from chronic dependence on foreign energy to a net exporter of energy for the first time in nearly seven decades, and in the process, made America stronger and safer. We've narrowed the trade deficit. We've revived entire communities and regional economies. We've given the world cleaner fuels. We offer practical climate solutions to policymakers on both sides of the aisle. And the natural gas we produce has made America the world's leader in reducing carbon dioxide emissions. Here's the key point. When a country becomes the leading producer of oil and natural gas and has reduced carbon dioxide emissions from electricity generation by 40% in 15 years, it is clearly doing many things right. These are hard-won gains. Our mission at API is to build on this progress. In so many ways, the state of American energy is strong. Our nation has the resources and expertise it takes to meet our energy needs, support millions of jobs, continue to address the risks of climate change, and keep America free from the dangers of dependence on unreliable foreign sources. Even so, we begin 2022 with Americans viewing energy and its costs as major concerns. This is in part because lately, we've seen policies aimed at restricting production and delivery of U.S. natural gas and oil. First, a pipeline bringing oil from Canada to the United States was quickly canceled, along with good-paying union jobs. Other energy pipeline projects face long-term delays. And as we've seen challenges in Michigan to existing critical infrastructure, like Line 5, that would put an entire region and its energy supply at risk. New leasing for energy development on federal acreage was stopped for many months. Meanwhile, with inflation soaring to historic levels, we've seen proposals in Congress for a targeted tax increase on natural gas and even further restrictions on American energy development. These decisions exacerbate Americans' concerns and put upward pressure on their energy prices. Lawmakers should avoid such policies, which don't put America on a path to progress, nor help us meet basic energy needs. When policy signals prevent energy leadership here at home, there are going to be consequences. U.S. policies that restrict domestic production force our country to seek relief from OPEC, undermining our energy independence. America should not be in the position of asking for foreign energy supplies, especially when we have abundant resources produced to standards that are among the highest in the world right here at home. Instead, we should be leading as the world's top producer of natural gas and oil. It's when things get rough in energy markets, when Americans have felt the turbulence of instability in places like California, Texas, or New England, that we can see energy as the bipartisan priority it should be. At API, we advocate in that spirit every single day. Nothing is more essential to economic growth than reliable, affordable, and abundant energy. To lose that advantage is not in anyone's best interest. And so, we make our case to everyone, working with both political parties in Congress and across all 50 states. In policy debates this year, it's possible we'll find more agreement than usual, if only because American energy leadership itself solves so many problems our nation faces. Energy is an input for practically everything else in the economy. With supply chain failures and with inflation on the minds of many Americans, the last thing anyone wants to see is more upward pressure on costs that are felt by every family and business. We need not look further than the situation in Europe to see what happens when nations depend on energy production from suppliers that have agendas of their own. Take the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. It sounds like a good idea for European economies to depend on regional energy suppliers. That is, so long as you forget who's on the other end of that pipeline. The problem is that when certain foreign governments control your energy, they have the power to use it for their own purposes, not yours. We don't want to learn that lesson the hard way. Against this backdrop, here in our country, we reject efforts to scale back domestic production and prevent new infrastructure to deliver energy to families and industries. So the question will become more urgent. As a country, do we really want to stay on the path of restricting production, denying permits, closing off access, and returning to the days of dependence on foreign sources? This is short-sighted energy policy, and we must consider those it's impacting. The real-world choices start with demand. Make no mistake, it's going to increase as populations grow and as more countries work to escape energy poverty. As new energy sources come online and are brought up to scale, natural gas and oil will be critical. And of course, some alternative sources, like solar and wind, are intermittent. They need natural gas as a backup. No matter how quickly we incorporate more renewable sources of energy, natural gas will be critical to a reliable energy grid. In discussions like these, we hear a lot about the energy transition. Here's the truth. This industry is ever evolving and transitioning through incorporation of new technology, cleaner fuels, and new systems to deliver energy with fewer emissions and a smaller footprint. We share with global leaders the goal and urgency of reduced emissions across the broader economy, and specifically those from energy production, transportation, and use by society. Our industry brings the scale and expertise to make lower carbon future a reality. This is about addition, not subtraction. America needs all the reliable and affordable lower carbon energy we can get. And we're working to bring carbon capture to commercial scale so that Americans can more quickly achieve its emission reductions targets. This industry is making it happen. One of America's strengths is how it has repeatedly shown the way in technology and environmental progress. Time and again, we've illustrated that some major breakthroughs come not by forced regulations and mandates, but through innovation and technology. In this job, I spend a fair amount of time on the road, seeing the work of our member companies and suppliers, and meeting people involved in every aspect of production, delivery, and refining. And what always amazes me is that whatever the problem, however complex, our workers are personally invested in solutions. Among the millions of men and women who make up our diverse workforce and supplier network, you find the same drive to advance, to improve, to solve, and to educate the next generation. I have the honor to meet the people of that caliber all the time. Take Sue Gumbel. She completed a 2-year program at Lackawanna College in Northeast Pennsylvania, and now she's the program director at the college's new School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Her students receive free access to API's world-class engineering and operations standards that support safety and sustainability in the field. Together with Sue, we are arming future problem solvers with relevant industry knowledge to jumpstart their energy careers. Let's hear from Sue right now.
Thanks for having me here today. The industry has been wonderful to our program here at this school, donating whatever is needed, like API donated, and give us full access to all their operational standards to use in our curriculum. And we have implemented it in the curriculum in numerous classes, which is very helpful. We all work together to make sure that everyone works safely, not only, you know, to keep everyone safe, but also the environment safe. That's what's great about this program, the industry being here. We would have nothing like this in the area if it wasn't for the oil and gas industry. They have actually made dreams come true for a lot of people around here, and I'm just blessed to be a part of it.
The work at Lackawanna College gives just a glimpse of the constant flow of ideas and new applications that are shaping today's natural gas and oil industry. And because what we do is so fundamental to the whole economy, so basic to modern life, one good idea can go a long way. Even a simple innovation can be high impact and far reaching. This is true, above all, of ideas that apply industry expertise to environmental challenges. Responsible environmental practice is a shared value in this country and in our industry. It is what Americans expect, and it's what we expect of ourselves. And we do more than support key environmental objectives. In many cases, such as carbon capture, we've created and are providing the very technologies that make progress possible. In fact, at its core, API is a standard-setting organization, codifying the engineering practices for every aspect of operations, from safety to sustainability to environmental protection. And our members are constantly raising the bar, setting and updating those standards through a collaborative process with the best and brightest minds from federal agencies, academia, citizens groups, and more. In 2021, API issued 77 published standards and announced API Energy Excellence, which unifies safety and environmental practices industry-wide. And we set forth our climate action framework with 5 basic goals: to strengthen emissions reductions in our industry and across the economy, to speed up development of cleaner fuels, to drive climate reporting to provide consistency and transparency, to support economy-wide carbon pricing mechanisms, and to deploy lower carbon technologies at commercial scale, all while continuing to meet growing energy demand. API is also partnering with government agencies and across industries to reduce emissions. We support the direct regulation of methane from new and existing sources and are sharing industry knowledge and experience to inform EPA's forthcoming rulemaking. We engage and collaborate with federal agencies to protect the nation's pipelines and other critical energy infrastructure from cyber attacks, and we've helped accelerate progress through collaboration with the auto industry on advanced vehicle technologies and cleaner fuels. New cars, trucks, SUVs, and buses run 99% cleaner for most tailpipe emissions than models produced in 1970. They also emit less CO2, even as vehicle miles traveled per year have increased threefold. The thinking is this. On their own, so many companies and their engineers have achieved incredible things, working together and in partnership with other sectors, pursuing common objectives, and sharing data and information, companies in our industry can meet climate goals at an even greater pace. And we aren't going to wait for Congress to act on climate. We're already taking action. Indeed, America has accepted the responsibility to lead on climate. Our industry views that responsibility as an opportunity. For us, that means fresh perspectives, bipartisan solutions, public-private partnerships, and showing the best and the brightest of the natural gas and oil industry. Good stewardship and motivated talent make a powerful combination. Here again, we see a rising generation of problem solvers. One of them is Heidi Gill, the founder and CEO of Urban Solution Group in Denver. Her firm has been a great partner to API members. Here's Heidi to tell you how.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. My name's Heidi Gill. I'm the founder and CEO of Urban Solution Group. We are a Denver-based oilfield service company that focuses on mitigating nuisance impacts to nearby communities. And it's so exciting because at Urban, we believe in this next generation of oil and gas development that not only takes care of the environment in the way that our industry does, but it also takes into account the social and political aspects that our industry is faced with. So in this new regulatory environment and political environment, operators are really stepping up to help invest in companies like mine that are striving to solve these regulatory and environmental challenges. And I think that we're excited to be here because the team has worked extremely hard, but we're even more excited to be a part of this next generation of oil and gas development that is helping mitigate impacts to communities, and it is taking environmental protection to the next level, and it is helping have social awareness and social compatibility with oil and gas development near humans. So it's exciting to see our dreams come to fruition, and it wouldn't be possible if operators weren't choosing to work with us because of this vision and what we are offering. So we're really excited to be here. We're really excited to be partnering with API on this and just greatly appreciate the opportunity.
Heidi's work reminds us that oil and natural gas are more than strategic national and geopolitical assets. For many communities, they comprise a local economic success story that's making all the difference. And as API advocates for responsible energy development, millions of men and women in those communities rightly feel that we're speaking up for them too. Over the past decade, through innovation and ingenuity, our industry has unleashed an American energy revolution and enabled the United States to improve prosperity. That impact is often felt where it's needed the most. In energy-producing areas from Pennsylvania to New Mexico, our industry has helped turn around entire communities and changed lives for the better. Men and women finding new opportunities in their hometowns, businesses starting up, property values rising, and tax revenues too. It's a story you see repeated in one region after another. It adds up to more than 11 million good jobs supported by this industry. For a snapshot of this dynamic, you could look most anywhere. Every time a new energy producing operation takes off, a whole network springs up to supply parts, materials, equipment, transportation, and services. The cycle of opportunity reaches far, as anyone involved can testify. Here's one oil field supplier, Chance Chase, describing what it means for him, his 40 employees, and his home state of New Mexico.
Hey, Mike. Hey, thanks for your time today. I'm Chance Chase of Mac Energy Corporation out in Southeast New Mexico. And, you know, oil and gas is a big part of my life. I'm a third generation family in oil and gas. And we are constantly growing. We're constantly improving. And the biggest thing I've seen growing up in New Mexico is not only are we growing our businesses, but we're helping grow communities. Our communities are growing not only in technology, but in healthcare and education, along with just infrastructure in itself. Oil and gas has helped fund new roads so we can go to better hospitals or bring in better doctors, better quality of life for everybody. And not only that, but it also helped raise new entrepreneurs that put together foundations that help give back to the community, because these communities really helped raise them. And with that, education has grown. You've seen new buildings pop up, new sports brought in. And it's very important to me that as a father now, that my kids know where that comes from and how we help power America and how they can also improve where we are now today. So, again, thanks again for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Chance is one of many thousands who can tell their version of the same good story. The consistent, unmistakable theme is American energy leadership and progress. It's a reminder that for all of our challenges, there isn't a country on earth that wouldn't want to have our advantages and be in our position. Worldwide, as the need for energy continues to grow, so will the commitment of nations like ours to a lower carbon future. Suppose that by 2040, every signatory to the Paris Climate Agreement was to meet their commitments. Even then, government experts say natural gas and oil will still account for almost half of all energy used. It's got to come from somewhere. And it ought to be from the United States of America, where we have vast reserves, a highly skilled workforce, stringent environmental rules, and strong industry standards. Meeting the world's growing need for energy while building a lower carbon future is the opportunity of our time. Governments, industries, and consumers must rise to seize it together. Today, in this same problem-solving spirit, I issue a call to action to the President, Congress, and lawmakers in all 50 states. First, work together on implementing policies that address the challenge of climate change. Through public-private partnerships, incorporating innovation, and lending scale and expertise of our industry and others, together we can meet the goals of a lower carbon future. A good place to start is with our forward-looking climate action framework, which you can read at api.org/climate. Second, prioritize advancing American energy leadership with policies that encourage development of responsibly produced energy here at home. These policies should recognize the volatile world we live in and the long-term impacts of returning to the days of foreign energy dependency. Third and finally, craft regulatory policies that increase certainty, unleash private investment, and build on and incorporate technological progress well underway, particularly on methane emissions reductions. Regulations have an important role to play in sustaining American leadership and shaping a lower carbon future. Ours is an industry that welcomes partnership and collaboration and is problem solving at its core. As you've seen today, our industry is filled with the exact kind of people needed to solve the greatest scientific challenges of our time. Engineers, geologists, scientists, and researchers, we all share this same goal and are neck deep in solving these challenges. Together, let's lead the future with progress made here in America. Thank you.
This is the Shale Gas News
DC Taylor, along with Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and Bill DeRozier. Yes, the Shell Gas News and the job segment coming up in just a few minutes, sponsored by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. But first, we'll give you the top five stories of the past week. And each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. You can find them at marcellusdrilling.com. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So we have, once again, for you a summary, the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five, CNX pleads no contest to criminal charges for bad record keeping. A few weeks ago, CNX Resources reached a plea deal with the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office over alleged violations of the Air Pollution Control Act and bad record keeping. Yeah, you heard that right. State Attorney General Josh Shapiro leveled criminal charges against CNX over miscounting how many times the company used a pig, that is a pipeline inspection gauge, to clean out a pipeline in Washington County. An anti-fossil fuel zealot who lives near the pigging station complained about noise and emissions and ran squealing to the AG, pun intended. CNX pleaded no contest. They admitted no guilt and agreed to pay $30,000 to South Franklin Township to restore 1,800 feet of a Chartiers Creek tributary in South Franklin Township Park and donate 184 acres in Elizabeth Township to Allegheny County. Both forms of payment totally unrelated to the bad paperwork charge to make it all go away. This is yet one more example of the extreme abuse of power by Josh Shapiro. He's running for governor this year, trying to make a name for himself by smearing the Marcellus industry. Big mistake, in our humble opinion.
Number four, D. Con Ed turns traitor, supports natural gas ban in New York City buildings. After signing the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Franklin is reported to have said, quote, "We must all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately," end quote. Oh, truer words were never spoken. Somewhat at Consolidated Edison, Con Ed never studied history. Con Ed has joined hands with the very people that seek to destroy the fossil fuel industry in a campaign to pressure New York City into adopting a new law prohibiting new customers from hooking up for natural gas delivery. Even though Con Ed itself is one of two primary suppliers of natural gas in New York City, why do such a foolish thing? Well, because reasons, Con Ed. All those customers will need electricity instead, and Con Ed will also provide electricity for most of New York City. The company is gambling that whatever money they lose on the gas side of the business will more than make up for on the electric side of the business. We call it bonkers. We call it being a traitor to the fossil fuel industry, the very industry that made Con Ed a large and profitable company in the first place. Only when Con Ed is hanging separately will they come to understand their tragic mistake. By the way, the number one source of electric power generation in New York State today is natural gas.
How about that?
All right.
The third most popular story over the past week, EQT officially responds to Senator Warren concerning corporate greed and LNG exports. U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren blamed corporate greed, in quotes, and LNG exports for the high price of natural gas in Massachusetts and other New England states in a letter sent to 11 big natural gas producers. EQT, one of the recipients of Ms. Warren's nasty gram, initially responded by going on the record with the Pittsburgh Business Times, which we covered in a previous post on MarcellusDrilling.com. EQT has just issued a press release and a letter of its own back to Warren, and it's devastating for her. In the letter and press release, EQT lays out the case refuting Warren's complete ignorance about commodities, simple economics, and the natural gas marketplace. EQT calls LNG exports the biggest green initiative on the planet, and with actual price data shows how natural gas prices today are much lower than they were prior to the shale revolution, even with LNG exports.
Number two, a deep dive into EQT hedging, CEO Toby Rice's brutal honesty. The third quarter was not kind to Marcellus Utica drillers with respect to the official income statements. Why? In a word, hedging. Take EQT, for example. During third quarter, EQT lost nearly $2 billion because of bad hedges, locking in prices to sell production far below current market prices. EQT was not alone, but because EQT is the largest natural gas producer in the country, averaging a 5.5 billion cubic feet per day in the third quarter, it makes a great case study. CEO Toby Rice didn't paper over the fact his company took a beating with its hedging. That open honesty earned him high marks from the investment community, at least with one analyst writing about it. According to the analyst, current GAAP, that's generally accepted accounting principles, standards tend to distort income reported on income statements and, in fact, cover up some of the good news coming from companies like EQT. In an article appearing on the Seeking Alpha Investors website, the analyst indicates the financial news was not as bad for EQT and others as it may appear when reviewing financial statements from the third quarter, D.
Okay. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week, Quebec to pay significantly more than $5 billion to jilted Utica drillers. In October, the province of Quebec, Canada, announced it will expropriate all of the rights for all oil and gas companies in the province to drill and extract oil and natural gas. It's all being shut down, including actively producing wells. Shutting down existing businesses in the province is something you might expect in communist China or Soviet Russia or tin horn dictatorships in South America, that is. It's not something you expect to see happening in Western democracies, yet it's happening in Quebec, home to a large deposit of the Utica shale. Now, Quebec drillers, those who had planned to tap their vast Utica shale assets, are demanding Quebec pay up, and the price will be, quote, significantly more than the $3 billion to $5 billion floated by the province's energy association. Yes, the Utica shale underlies large portions of Quebec. We often get this question when writing about the Canadian Utica because our U.S.-centric maps don't show the Utica reaching up into Canada, but it does. So those are your top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at MarcellusDrilling.com/email. Now it's time for the job segment, exploring the careers, your potential careers in the gas and energy industries. It's brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Thank you, DC Taylor. And in Pennsylvania, Seneca Resources Company looking for a well tender, a developer, an automation and SCADA expert. That's out of Wellsboro and Brookville, Pennsylvania. GeoPetro is a new company, GeoPetro LLC, a lease operator and pumper based in Beaver County. That's northwest of Pittsburgh. UGI Utilities Alignment First Class in Fortyfort. Mid-Ohio Pipeline Services has an opening for a pipeline welder. That's for the entire state of Pennsylvania. It's a traveling position. Bolt Communication, a construction superintendent headquartered in Pittsburgh. TRC Solutions, a driller's helper out of Pottsville. Honeywell, the thermostat folks, looking for a field service technician, also headquartered in Pottsville. Miller Pipeline, looking for a natural gas distribution foreman out of Pittsburgh. Coterra Energy, formerly Cabot Oil and Gas, looking for a field operator out of Montrose, and New Pig Energy, field technician for their well pad containment unit out of Duncansville. In Ohio, TC Energy, looking for a pipeline technician out of Pomeroy. ROC Service Company, looking for an experienced roustabout based in New Philadelphia. Stallion Oil Field Services, a communications technician out of Paris, Ohio. Wagner Energy Services, an opening for a field technician, LLC, that's based in Marietta. Estes Compression, looking for a natural gas compression field technician for the entire Buckeye state of Ohio. Lima Refinery, looking for a process operator trainee. It's out of New Philadelphia. Oil States Energy Services, LLC, looking for a flowback operator that's also based in New Philadelphia. And EnLink Midstream, looking for a crude hauler. It's out of Cadiz. In West Virginia, Apex Energy Services, looking for a general labor and roustabouts, plural, it's out of Wheeling. Northeast Natural Energy, looking for an ESG coordinator. It's out of Charleston. Southwestern Energy, looking for a field operator and a construction foreman that's based in Morgantown. Peoples Natural Gas, looking for a supervisor for their gas operations out of Fairmont. Diversified Energy Services, looking for rig hands out of Buchanan. Select Energy Services, a water transfer operator based in Houston. and TC Energy looking for a GIS analyst out of Charleston. Got a handful in New York State, Dominion Energy looking for a supervisor for their gas transmission operations unit that's out of Utica Station and New Hartford, New York. Kinder Morgan looking for a pipeline crew leader based in Gilderlands Center. AppPlus looking for an environmental permitting specialist headquartered in Rochester. Con Ed looking for a federal energy policy manager for the entire Empire State of New York. And Avangrid, an opening for a supervisor for the construction and maintenance unit that's based in Elmira, New York. And those, as DC mentioned, the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thanks for finding your future with natural gas and energy in general here in the new year, 2022. Hope you're having a good year thus far. We thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News, heard on our network of stations. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations, with the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks for listening to Shale Gas News.